KQED. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, three San Francisco supervisors are pledging to shut down the county's juvenile facility after a Chronicle investigation found that serious crime by youth is down more than 80% from its peak in the 90s. We look at what it would mean to end the jailing of youth in San Francisco. Then, a new bill would require the state, not individual doctors, to exempt kids from getting vaccinated in California. Waivers for vaccines are on the rise, and state health officials are worried as New York tries to stem a measles outbreak. Join us on Forum. Welcome to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, sitting in for Michael Krasny. A significant drop in youth crime since the 90s has left San Francisco's 150-bed juvenile hall only about a third full and also costly to maintain. Some San Francisco supervisors are working on a way to shut down the facility, including Hillary Ronan.
Study after study after study shows that when a child is held in juvenile hall, they come out much worse than when they went in.
Meantime, Mayor London Breed has organized a task force to look at the city's juvenile justice system and alternatives to incarceration. Their response from city leaders was prompted by a San Francisco Chronicle series called Vanishing Violence that shows California is spending millions of dollars to maintain a youth incarceration system. And the reporters of that series join me now. Jill Tucker is a K-12 education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle. Good morning, Jill Tucker.
Good morning.
Joaquin Palomino is a data and investigative reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle as well. Good morning, Joaquin Palomino.
Good morning.
And Joaquin, I will start with you first. Remind us, how bad was youth homicide in the mid-90s?
So starting around 1987, a crime wave sort of started to take place in California. And it went through the mid-90s. And, you know, in the mid-90s, you had about, on average, about one juvenile was slain every day in the state.
Wow.
There's about 60 kids that were arrested for serious and violent felonies. So things really got pretty bad. There was around a seven-year window where youth crime was really, you know, really bad in the state.
And what was driving it?
A number of factors were driving it. I think Jill Tucker, I mean, she did most of the reporting on sort of the causes, but there was, you know, a lot of gang activity. There was a sort of booming drug trade. I'm not sure if you want to add anything else.
Yeah. Please do, Jill Tucker, and also tell us then what made it stop.
Well, and that's the big question. I think people are still struggling to figure out, first, why crime spiked, although the crack cocaine trade, the Saturday Night Special, cheap guns were fueling a lot of that. But even more, there's questions about why it declined and has continued to decline for the last 20 years to now what are historic lows. I mean, we're back to, you know, 1950s or before that levels of youth crime. It's really eye-popping, some of these numbers that we found. Researchers speculate that it could be everything from the reduction of the crack cocaine market, but also reducing lead poisoning in children, which affects brains and decision-making skills. Also technology, the availability of that. There's so many theories, but no one knows exactly why, which is in part why folks are sort of wondering if this is going to last. Right. If this record low youth crime is something that we can count on continuing,
which is one of the reasons that some of these facilities, even if they are mostly empty, have remained open.
Yes. And in fact, even after crime started going down, what we found was they were actually increasing capacity and still are of these juvenile halls. And you'll hear folks, they're sort of saying, well, yeah, we think this is the new normal, but we're still holding our breath. You know, who knows if these places will fill up again?
So that's what you mean when you report that California has responded slowly, if at all, to the decline in youth crime. Based on your investigation, can you give an answer as to whether or not you think that this is a a new permanent normal?
Well, based on the length of this, I mean, crime is somewhat cyclical, based on the economy, based on a lot of things. But the reality is, I mean, we're talking 2 decades. And what we're hearing from, you know, the juvenile justice reform community, but even folks like District Attorney Gascon and others across the state are basically saying, look, this is the new normal. And but this is also an opportunity. There are so few kids in the system now. We can actually rethink a system that research has shown actually doesn't help kids get better, that putting them in a cell with their shoes outside the door, walking down halls with their hand behind their back in jumpsuits is not does not lead to lower crime.
Well, let's put some numbers to this, Joaquin Palomino. What does it cost to maintain our current system, its infrastructure, and other aspects of it right now?
So, yeah, every county, I mean, they have their own juvenile justice system, so every county is spending money differently. And we did a survey. We looked at 14 counties across California to see how much the average annual cost of detaining a youth was. And we found that it's been increasing dramatically, up to about 220% since 2011, you know, the cost of maintaining these facilities. And in some counties, I mean, they're spending $500,000 plus a year. Alameda County spends about that. Santa Clara County spends about that. And this is sort of a byproduct of having fewer and fewer kids in these facilities, but the amount of money directed to them has remained, you know, relatively flat.
I see. Jill yeah. Tucker.
And just that's $500,000 per child annually to keep them incarcerated. So, you know, $1,400 a day to keep them in a cell where they get their food on a tray and locked in a cement room with a cement platform bed.
And why, Joaquin Palomino, have the costs been going up? Is it just generally inflation and various other things, the costs of maintenance, materials, labor?
Yeah, in part. And you really had this building boom that occurred between 1997 and 2007, where many, many counties expanded their juvenile halls, built brand new juvenile halls, and now you have these really, really big facilities that are almost everywhere, mostly empty. And so there are fixed costs associated with that. You know, even if you have 5 kids in a 60-bed facility, which we found in Nevada County, you still need to pay the cooks. You still need to pay a certain amount of guards. You still need to pay, you know, the support staff. And so, it really is just the fact that maintaining this system is expensive.
We're talking with Joaquin Palomino, data investigative reporter for The Chronicle, and Jill Tucker, a K-12 education reporter for The Chronicle, about what's behind the significant drop in juvenile crime in California that's left many counties with costly facilities to maintain. 3 San Francisco supervisors are pledging to shut down San Francisco's juvenile facility. Do you think that's the way to go? What are your questions or comments or even concerns for our guests? This is a half-hour segment, so the time to call is now. You can call us at 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can post your comments on our website, kqed.org/forum. On Facebook, you can tweet us at kqedforum, or you can email us at forum@kqed.org. One of the things that you wrote about, Jill Tucker, was where this money could go and how this money compares with what we're spending on other things like education. Spell that out for us.
Well, so the cost to educate a child in California, or at least the state spending on it, is about $11,000, give or take, per child. So when you compare that to the cost of incarcerating a child, you know, it's a huge difference. Juvenile justice reformers have a lot of ideas of how this money could be spent. I mean, the reality is you're always going to have some children that are involved in criminal activity, and there will be some children who pose a threat to themselves or others. So no one's saying that they don't need some type of facility. But I think what they're looking at are new models, because this idea of a juvenile hall, which is essentially a jail for young people, is an old model that doesn't work. It makes kids worse, as Hillary Ronan said in the research. So they're looking at different ways that you may have still secure facilities, but more rehabilitative with a lot more support.
So be a little more specific with your examples, because what are the alternatives? If juvenile hall closes, where will kids go who commit crimes?
Well, so the city, the idea is to have a task force to create new models, but there a lot of people look at the Missouri model, where they have sort of dorm-like settings within the community that have no more than 30 to 50 kids. And they're, you know, some are in state parks or on college campuses. Some are secure lockdown facilities, but the kids are in normal clothes. They're in normal beds. They don't have their shoes outside the door. They do group therapy all the time. It's a very different setting than a jail. More like a group home, perhaps, that type of thing. So there are different models out there of how you can still have a secure environment or different levels of security, depending on the type of crime, but serve the children and their needs, whether it's mental health needs or, you know, in San Francisco, 90% of the kids that are in juvenile hall have open mental health cases. So these are kids who have other issues other than just the crime that they committed.
And Joaquin Palomino, did you look at what these alternatives would cost compared with our current system now?
So, the Missouri model is significantly cheaper. I want to say the highest. I mean, there are different levels of security. The highest security facility, I think, was around $80,000 a year, and so far less than what many counties are spending for juvenile halls. And there are some counties that are spending, you know, less than others as well. And so it is something I think the state and counties may look into.
Do you hear concerns that juvenile hall exists as a crime deterrent? The idea of being jailed in a facility like that stops kids from doing things that that would be harmful or violent to others.
Well, I think that's the old school idea, but
the culture is changing.
Yeah. And there's been so much research on this that, you know, that kids go into juvenile hall and they often come out worse than when they went in. So the research is generally showing that jail-like setting, that harsh jail-like setting is not as much of a deterrent as people would hope.
Well, we've got listeners calling in, and I'm going to start with Connie in Woodside. Hi, Connie.
This is Bonnie from Woodside. I'd like to hear your perspective on what we are able to do with these facilities to meet pediatric mental health needs before unmet mental health issues escalate into criminal behavior.
Bonnie, thanks. Sorry about mispronouncing your name earlier. Jill Tucker, you want to answer Bonnie's question?
Yeah, so I think this is a huge concern for the local politicians and others, is meeting the mental health needs of youth, issues related to trauma or other types of issues, and finding them those services before that turns into criminal activity, or even after they've been involved in the juvenile justice system, making sure they're getting the resources they need. And what Hillary Ronan and the other supervisors are saying is if a child has mental health needs, the last place they should be is in a lockdown facility alone in a cell, you know, on a mat.
Well, let's go next to Bob in Berkeley. Hi, Bob. Hi, Bob. Are you there? We'll see if we can get a line to Bob in a moment. Meantime, Ben writes, San Francisco has become way more affluent, so it makes sense that there are going to be fewer juvenile delinquents. If we spend money dismantling these facilities, it will just cost more when we have to rebuild. So I think Ben is definitely questioning whether or not this is a new normal.
Well, and I think the issue is that this isn't just something that's happening in San Francisco. This the crime collapse of juvenile crime collapse is not only across the Bay Area, but the state, the country, and even international. So we're looking at a trend that is not just in San Francisco related to the increase of wealth or these types of things or people moving out of the city. This is a systemic drop in crime that people are dealing with.
And I believe we have Bob back. Hi, Bob. Are you with us?
Yes, I'm.
Hello, Bob.
Hello.
Okay, go ahead.
I was raised on the streets with no supervision, and I'm almost 60 years old, but I moved back to the Bay Area 3 years ago and living in an RV in a Home Depot parking lot and watched firsthand it's become a wild, wild west out here. And the adults that are living in these tents, they're starting to become younger and younger, and they're overwhelmed. The police are overwhelmed. I talked to them personally, and they say they just throw their hands up. So those places that are supposed to, I'm not saying that's the right way to deter juveniles, lock them up, but I'm just saying whatever the law, why it went down, it's going to be coming back up. And I'm not an expert, but that's just my opinion.
So you're making a connection between the number of homeless youth and the likelihood that
they'll
need these facilities?
Well, it's a changing world out here. It's a complete changing world. And what are you going to do when you can't find a job as a youth? There's not enough jobs to go around for everybody.
Well, Bob, I think...
So they turn to crime.
I think you make an important point. And I also think, though, that Bob is also making me think about alternatives that these facilities could be used for to address conditions that have not yet happened. Deanne, for example, asks, the first thing that comes to mind is alternative uses for this structure, with which I admittedly have no familiarity, but I wonder, what are the chances and hurdles related to converting it into affordable housing or a shelter or into studios? Any thoughts on what these spaces could be used for, Joaquin Palomino, and whether there would, what the hurdles would be to getting some alternatives started?
So, yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. And there are, you know, the mayor's task force will be looking into that, Supervisor Ronan, and if this legislation passes, they will also be looking into that. And really, what do you do with all of this empty space? And I don't feel like I'm in a position to answer that, but I do think that it's something that people are grappling with, you know, not just in San Francisco, as Jill mentioned. Juvenile halls and probation camps across California are empty, and really across the country. In Arizona, I mean, they did an interesting thing where they began converting some largely empty, very expensive juvenile halls, juvenile holding facilities into youth centers. And they have a whole task force statewide that's looking at how do we repurpose this space.
Well, I guess a more specific question, Jill Tucker, would be, do you think that these three San Francisco supervisors who want to shut down Juvenile Hall in San Francisco will face hurdles, will face opposition, significant opposition?
Well, I think there's always opposition for big changes. And I do think that they're, you know, based on what Juvenile Probation Chief Alan Nance said, you know, he's concerned with the idea of not having a facility like this to address the needs of kids who should be taken out of society for safety reasons. So I do think there's going to be, you know, whether people concerned about jobs, people concerned about safety, I think there is going to be some pushback. I think there's going to be some questions about what is the appropriate setting for youth who commit crime. And then if in fact they do succeed in this, what do you do with that huge facility? You know, on Woodside Road in San Francisco, do you convert it into a homeless shelter? Do you use it for affordable housing, mental health facility? As Hillary Ronan said, you know, there's going to be a lot of ideas for how to use that facility, and a lot of people will want that space.
Well, Juanada asks, SF is reputed to have a very low population of children compared to other metro areas. Has that been factored into the low juvenile crime numbers, Joaquin Palomino?
Yeah. So when we looked at juvenile crime, and we focused really heavily on violent felony arrests, just because those there wouldn't have been policy changes or law, legal changes that would have brought those numbers down. We calculated a rate, so by the population of juveniles between 10 and 17, so the kids that were most likely committing these crimes. And the rate has dropped dramatically. So it's not just the raw numbers, it's also the rate here in San Francisco and all over the state as well.
And Austin in Dublin, what would you like to ask our guest?
Hi.
Hi.
In the book Freakonomics, the author suggests that the drop in adolescent crime is tied to the passage of Roe versus Wade. And I just wanted to hear the guest's opinion on that.
Jill Tucker.
Yeah, so we did part of our series. There's a story in there that addresses the theories on why crime dropped. And that is one of the theories. But if you look at the research, somewhat correlates in the timing of it, and it has been a very strong theory over the years, but it doesn't necessarily, the causation of it is not necessarily proven, and it certainly wouldn't explain the ongoing drop. I mean, from last year to this year, I mean, it's a continuing drop despite, you know, Roe v. Wade was passed, you know, quite a long time ago.
Well, thanks for the question, Austin, and I'll go next to Susan in San Ramon. Hi, Susan.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead. You're on.
I've been a volunteer at the Contra Costa County Juvenile Hall for over 25 years now, part of a bedtime reading program. And the facility there is actually pretty great. It's not, you know, your first choice. You want a child in a home and things working. But they do counseling. They have a pastor there that they have full time. The staff is professional, but not necessarily cold. There's just a lot there, and being able to actually interact with the kids over these years, a lot of the kids felt safer and better cared for in a juvenile hall setting.
So are you saying, Susan, forgive me,
their own home,
is that you would like to keep these facilities but just improve the services?
Well, I think that that is something that should be looked at, especially because they are usually not funded for actual, like, counseling services.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate your point. And we just have 2 minutes left, so I want to get a couple of more thoughts in here, if I could. I'll go next to Regina in Sonoma. Hi, Regina.
Hi, thank you. I'll be quick. Are the actual felonies being reported, or, I mean, there may be a trend where people are not actually reporting felony activity because they're afraid, like, oh, my God, maybe the police will come out and shoot these people or something like that.
Let me ask Joaquin Palomino.
Yeah, so we're focusing on the arrests, and obviously those could change in time, you know, if people are reporting fewer crimes, if police are arresting few people. But it really is the best metric you have for specifically juvenile crime when you want to look at, you know, crime rate for a specific age group.
Well, Helen writes, $1,400 per day to incarcerate a child. That's impressive considering what it would cost to have said child in a live-in educational facility with nutritious food, mental health care, and knowledge-based time away from their troubled homes. Wallace writes, I work with that small percentage of kids that worship money, drugs, and guns. If juvenile halls are closed, there better be an alternative. Jill Tucker, do you want to just give us a quick status on where our lawmakers in San Francisco are with their proposals?
Yeah, so the supervisors are drafting the legislation right now. They expect to introduce it in early April and hope to have a final vote in June, which would essentially start the timer for a full closure of juvenile hall by the end of 2021.
And what about Mayor Breed's task force?
So Mayor Breed's task force is kicking off. It's more taking a look at it without, you know, with the idea that there would be suggestions forthcoming out of that process.
Jill Tucker, she's K-12 education reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, and Joaquin Palomino, data and investigative reporter for the Chronicle. Thank you both for talking with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And your series is up on our website, Vanishing Violence. Check it out. I'm Mina Kim. We've got another half hour of Forum, this time on vaccine, so stay with us for that.